I'm not totally sure what to call this one, because it's not like we do some episodes where they're like rigidly non-bike, and then we obviously most of our episodes are pretty rigidly bike. This is going to be a healthy dusting of bike on top of a big tray of non-bike nonsense. We're post-states. I think a lot of people, with some glaring exceptions, are kind of taking a step back from the bike for a week or two, partying, going to dances and stuff. Maybe, you know, haven't been on the bike quite as much. So we've got some non-bike stuff that we're going to talk about. But this is not one of those we're not allowed to say the B word episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, this is something I just thought sounded kind of fun. And I think I kind of had a hard time selling it to Joe because he thought it sounded kind of silly. Like, but we're basically doing I wanted to do like a Halloween episode. Yeah. And again, we're going to talk a little bit about the team and about bikes up front, but then the deep dive is just going to be kind of fun Halloween-y nonsense stuff. That's, I don't know. I hope it's going to be fun. If it's not fun, apologies in advance.
I think that's always the best way to present something, is by apologizing for it, like out of the gates and saying it's going to suck.
I know.
I don't know if you can tell, but we're really confident about the product we're delivering here. But with that in mind, there were a couple of things. We had our award show last week, and you know, there were some things that slipped through the cracks, some performances we want to talk about. So we do want to give those precedence at the beginning of the show here.
Yeah, and I knew that. I mean, there's just so many people. Like every writer has done something that's worth shouting out.
You've all done at least something commendable.
You know, and well, so like there were a few that we just didn't really shout out, that I kind of was kind of kicking myself a little bit after. Yeah. You know, and honestly, like, we really want to shout out as many people as we can. You know, it doesn't cost us anything. So
seriously, if you want to shout out, you could just text Dan, hey, I want to shout out,
and we'll shout you out for no reason whatsoever. But we don't want to be stingy with it, but sometimes we just kind of overlook things, so you know, you guys got to kind of keep us on track. But but yeah, there's like one I think, and a lot of these kids probably even got nominated. We were just like reading through those lists really quickly and missing things.
Yeah,
those
forms spit out spreadsheets with tons of names on them. So,
and my eyes aren't that good.
Yeah.
And, you know, so anyhow, but one I want to throw out, Jay Foster, he rides with Skyline, just had an amazingly good States race. He got like eighth in JVB, and that was, oh, he was super excited about that. Another one I just really want to shout out, and this is a personal one for me, is Zarek.
Oh yeah.
You know, like we talk about Xander all the time, and Zarek is like, he rides with Skyline, and he is just like always there, like helping other, like he'll go to other races to support some of his friends. Like he supported like Ben Bigwood during his big, huge Frog Hollow attempt thing. And Zarek's just always there, like getting kids' bikes ready for racing. And he races himself and does great. He had a great season.
He's a fantastic bike rider.
But he is just like always out there helping other people. And I just think he's just like one of the coolest kids I know. So I just wanted Zarek to know that I appreciate how cool he is. And you know, he's definitely one of those people that just makes the world a little bit better. So
yeah, I think there's a lot of like people who are kind of like cultural, like cornerstones of the mm-hmm. team, and
oh, yeah.
he's one of those.
He is.
You know,
Amy Larkin wanted me to shout out Chris, Ben Bigwood's mom, just because she's just one of those that's just kind of behind the scenes. She helps me out a ton, and she's at like all the races, and just such a great resource, and just does so much for so many people. So
like the behind the scenes cliche, like sure, but like the amount of work that goes on is huge, you know, and not just with us, with like Nika, all like they're, if you totaled up the hours and experience that are donated for free to the youth mountain biking or like apparatus that we have going on here in Utah, it's, immeasurable. It's really so great. Thank you, everybody.
I love the Bigwood family. And the thing is, I know Chris listens. So, hey, Chris.
There's your shout out.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, and then the other day, Sharon and I were walking on that new trail back behind Eastwood, and a kid was in a Skyline kit, and he passed us just riding like just smooth as silk, you know. And this is after States, and it was Gordon Rice.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one I was supposed to shout out during the
during
the awards show, but I don't think I did. And if I did, great, but I think I neglected to. He had an amazing breakthrough season this year, and he's a super quiet kid. Just awesome family. His parents are so cool. But just a quiet kid that had a breakthrough season. And I think he's definitely one to watch. So yeah. Shout out to Gordon Rice. And then we mentioned this next one a little bit during the last one, but I don't think we did it justice really, but Mac Montgomery.
Oh yeah.
So I was at States, I was like getting some bikes ready, and Matt came up to me. He's like, Dan, do you need help with anything? And I was kind of taken back, 'cause I'm like, you know, you're like a varsity rider and you know, we should be helping you right now. But he went out, I'm like, that's just so awesome. And I couldn't think of anything at the time that I needed help with, but I was just so impressed by him. But anyhow, he probably is one that from what I hear from his team is that like when it's like intervals or hard workouts, he's just crushing it. Like he could keep up with Colin De La Garza on pretty much any workout, any ride, but just had some of the worst luck at races, you know. And he's, from what I understand, he's just one where his racing never proved what his fitness was capable of, you know? So, my advice is like, keep going,
keep racing.
It's going to happen. Like that you'll get the luck and the fitness lined up right, and you're just going to have some awesome experiences. So yeah, that's
it's statistics. You can only be unlucky so often. Yeah. You know, like if you race enough, no one's unlucky 100% of the time. So, and I'll shout out too. Try different disciplines. There's a big wide world of bike racing out there outside of Nike. So if you like, if you're Nike racing, you're like, oh, this is fun with my friends, whatever. Try some cross.
Yeah, or, you know, just keep doing the I-cups.
If you're not super attached to having skin, try some crits. You know, like if you're moving outside of Utah, maybe some road racing. Even like the endurance mountain bike racing, there's tons of different stuff. So like as another shout out,
well,
everybody keep racing bikes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, go do some I-cups. A lot of times I think people that have bad luck, I think a lot of it's just stress and pressure.
Well, Nike too is like crazy.
Yeah.
Like Nike racing is wild. It is the most, like it's kind of unhinged. Like go, if you've only ever done Nike racing, try a Nike Cup.
Yeah.
Very different experience.
Yeah. I think sometimes when you just have less pressure, you're just going to perform better.
Oh yeah.
Your energy is moving you forward on the bike and not just crushing you with stress, you know? So,
yeah.
And then another, Isabel Blackburn, I don't know if we mentioned her in the last, just fantastic results. She had a little bit of some mechanical troubles this year, but was just always just kind of barely off the varsity podium. I think she might have been on one. I can't remember. But she had a great, great season. Her brother, Weston, I know some people shouted out him, but he is just like the most lovable, hilarious kid you're ever going to meet.
Other than me, right, Dan?
Weston is the most. No. And the last one I just wanted to shout out this time, because we'd be happy to shout out some more people next week, is Nolan Reinbold.
Oh, my gosh. I love Nolan.
He just sent me a message the other day that just made my day. It was just so nice and just so kind and so thoughtful. And I'm like, I don't know that I was that thoughtful when I was that age. You know.
No, so Nolan's one of my boys. I'm very happy to claim him. He is ridiculously smart. Like he's, but not just that, like he has the emotional maturity. And I can say this, I have some expertise on this now, like the emotional maturity of teenagers, of like a very well-educated, well-traveled 65-year-old man. Like he is so good to talk to. He's got a outrageously bright future ahead of him. But you know, and then like, it's not like you know, like other kids are like, there's plenty of nice kids out there, but he's one of those like standout, like, oh my gosh, you seem like you've been on this planet a lot longer than you actually have. You're very good at being a human being. If you want your kids to turn out well, arrange some play dates with Nolan, man. Like, he is phenomenal. I absolutely, and he's done so much bike racing this year too. Like, he's been doing all the cross and like, basically racing his bike at every opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Super, yeah, super cool.
He's at like most of the iCups and yeah. So there's some more shout outs. If you guys can think of anyone that needs some more shout outs, we love to do it. You know, it's just,
oh yeah.
I love doing it. So, this week, I don't know. Do you have any national cycling news you want to go over?
I don't know. I mean, there have actually been a few interesting stories in the world of cycling, depending on how much you want to dive into. Like, there was the whole Tom Pidcock thing, where Tom Pidcock and Ineos kind of had a falling out, and it looked like he was going to leave the team. They deselected their best rider for a monument at the Lombardia, which was really, really crazy. And a pro-continental level team called Q365 was going to pick him up, which was also kind of crazy to me that they could afford that. And then that fell apart. There was the Ellie Iserbit cross drama. Did you see that?
No.
Ellie Iserbit, it was all over Instagram. Somebody like cut him off in a race and they crashed, and he gets up from the crash and starts stomping on this guy's bike.
I saw
Did
that.
You see that?
That wasn't cool.
That really wasn't cool. And he got suspended for like three races, but then he came back and won the big cross race this weekend. That I thought might be interesting to talk about. Because that's a situation you'll inevitably find yourself in, is somebody else's mistake costs you in a race. And I think that was a phenomenal example of how to not handle that. And he's getting eaten alive right now on Instagram. Like, people aren't stoked on him.
Yeah, that wasn't cool. You know, and I think that there is really a good life lesson there. You know, that sometimes it's extra hard to be cool in certain situations, but if you can, it will pay dividends.
Oh yeah.
Ultimately, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, and so I was actually telling my kids this, because there's a lot of like newsflash, middle school's a rough place. Right. And I was telling my kids like being nice to people you like is like kindergarten, right? Like, in kindergarten, we expect you to be nice to people that you like, right? Be nice to your friends. Don't hurt your friends. Right. The higher order skill you learn as you get older is to be nice to everyone. Right. To be nice to people you don't like, to be nice to people who are mean to you,
or at least kind.
Right. And sure, just at a certain point, right, you don't have to be like indiscriminately nice, like Dan for you. You don't have to be indiscriminately nice to everybody all the time. Right. But this was a case where, like, yeah, sure, the guy picked a stupid line, and like, really could have been, you know, like, it could have been him that people were going after in the Instagram comments. Like, man, what an idiot. That was a stupid line to pick or whatever. Right. But just that really emotional, that kind of emotional volatility on show, especially from someone like Ellie Iserbit, who in the absence of Van der Poel and Van Aert is pretty consistently the best cross racer in the world. Like, if you take the best cross racers in the world out, he's the best cross racer in the world, is how I'd explain Ellie Iserbit. Really bad look. Bad look for sponsors. But if Ridley actually employs anyone in marketing, and I'm not convinced that they do, like, they're having a panic attack all week long, because that's a really bad look. So, you know, like, there will come a day when somebody's stupid mistake costs you, and it will pay dividends in the long term, even not even just from be a good person perspective, from like a practical image standpoint, be cool. Make the other person, you'll make the other person look worse by being cool, is the other thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Depending on how you want to look at this.
You kind of got to step back and not let your lizard brain just take over.
No.
You got to step back and
we all know people whose lizard brains run their lives, and those are not people that we're trying to emulate here at Maybird. So
this is kind of turning into a pretty crappy Halloween episode.
Yeah, right? I know. Well, and you know what? We're only 14 minutes in, and that's okay. So like, I there's some other stuff.
But there's definitely a good lesson there. Thanks for bringing
that up. That was the one thing I did kind of want to, you know, seem relevant to us.
There's a couple things I want to talk about locally, but, you told me a story the other day that kind of touched me a little bit. And I thought it would be cool to maybe just talk about here. And this isn't about someone on Maybird, but you told a story of because Joe, he now teaches sixth graders, and it's kind of in a lower income area, right?
It's not that bad. It's in Taylorsville, and it's not in like a particularly nice part of Taylorsville. like the stats for my school right now, it's around 40 to 50% of the kids are classified as economically disadvantaged. It's an area with a huge immigrant population too. Like about a quarter of my kids don't speak English very well. My average sixth grader reads in a third grade level. Most of their parents work at Amazon, kind of a thing. So it's, I don't want to like, it's not Compton.
Yeah.
I don't want to misrepresent it, but it is an area where there are...
Well, it's different than Skyline and Alta.
It's very different than the neighborhoods that Maybird predominantly serves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell the story about that kid that you inspired to, that story you were telling me about the kid that went out and wrote, did his bike ride.
Oh yeah. This is a student of mine who's actually an immigrant language learner. Outrageously smart, tests really, really high, has picked up English really, really fast. And I, you know, shoehorn cycling into everything. Right. This is not a neighborhood where, I mean, like Taylorsville has a Nike team, but it's not a neighborhood where like going out and riding your bike is, you know, particularly easy or safe compared to around here. And he is just like this kid, I want him to be an astronaut, man. Like his math is his specialty, but he's a very good rider, super, super smart.
Rider with a W, by the way.
Yeah. Well, both. And he was telling me, he's like, I have a bike. I got a bike. My mom just bought me a bike. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I want to see a picture of your bike. And so he breaks school rules, takes out his phone, right? And he's showing me this bike and it's like a very much a Kmart bike. Right. And I was like, dude, that's sweet. Like, hey, you know, you're old enough now. Like Taylorsville has this team, you know, like if you don't have the gear, like there's ways we can get it for you. If you want more information on that, let me know, you know? We came back after the weekend and he was like, hey, I did a really big bike ride, in my neighborhood. And I was like, oh, that's super cool. What did you use? He's like, I downloaded this app where you can train. He downloaded Strava. Now, he didn't know how to use Strava, so he didn't publish it, but he tracked the ride on Strava and he rode like 50 miles doing laps in his neighborhood, which is insane.
On a Kmart bike.
Insane. He said he was riding for 9 hours. His goal was to ride 50 miles. Now, 11-year-olds in general don't have like great work ethic, and I think especially this group of kids I'm working with are really like, these are kids where it's pulling teeth to get them to do anything, right? So it was really like I'm not heartwarming, just like inspiring and exciting to see that there are still people out there who have the kind of drive to go out and do something, you know, that like most people don't appreciate riding a bike in circles till their 40s, right? And Nike is doing something to change that, but for this kid to just go out on his own on equipment like that and do a big old ride, I was like, dude, that's so cool.
I just got kind of choked up the first time Joe told me that story. And
yeah.
I believe you, because his mom's a single mom, right? And
yeah.
you contacted her, told her about some of the
yeah
the opportunities through Nike, and that they do have opportunities for some of these kids that can't afford the equipment and so forth, you know, and, you know, like, yeah, I'm...
Well, in this kid, I was just like, I am so glad that our society has you. Holy smokes, man. Like I was telling my kids, like, I know plenty of smart people who don't do anything good for the world, you know, but just at the intersection of like people who are really smart like that and have work ethic and can appreciate some of those bigger ideas more than just like what feels good and helps me right now. Kind of like to do something is, I don't want to say maybe like nebulous, is just ride a bike in a circle a whole bunch of times just to see if you can. That's really cool. And, you know, I tell people too that like, I think it's easy and fun to like, for me to tell stories about the crazy, wild and kind of discouraging stuff that happens there. But yeah, man, you do meet people where I'm like, this kid, like
watch out, bro.
Watch out, dude. He's going to do some awesome stuff. So that was cool.
Well, speaking of people that have done some awesome things.
We're talking about me now. Just kidding.
Like I said, speaking of people who have done awesome things.
Yes. Okay.
So Gabe and Oliver,
mm.
we're going to have them on we're going to do a special podcast for Gabe and Oliver. But, for those of you that don't know, Friday, they'd been planning this for a while, but they did an Everest attempt,
which we should explain really quick for those of you who got into cycling post COVID. If any of you are listening, Everesting is something that has existed for a long time, but became very popular during COVID because there was no racing. And Everesting is fundamentally where you go out and climb the height of Everest, which is 29,029 feet, which is huge. Point to point's like 12,000 feet.
No, not even
for reference.
That. It's 11. Like 10,500.
Yeah, something like that. And strictly like Everesting is when you do it on the same climb again and again and again and again. So this was big during COVID. Like Keegan had the Everesting FKT. I think Ronan McLaughlin has it now or something like that. It's a really, really interesting event that we have talked about before and that a lot of people did. And I had actually had no idea they were going to do it. And you actually went and joined them.
Yeah, I took some time off work and I only got to ride with them. I rode with them like 3 or 4 hours, you know, but my goodness, his parents, they were so prepared. They had like, well, I honestly thought the coolest part of the day was their dad had a board. They made it out of cardboard and it had like, they had figured all the laps that they were going to have to do because they basically started at the winter gate and went up to Alexander Basin and then they'd flip it there and do it again. And it was a little over 1,000 feet.
How many, in what, like 2 miles or something like that? 2-3?
About, yeah. Something it was like kind that. Of a more gradual incline than most people Everest on.
Yeah.
So I think they probably got more miles than...
And I should say, they were on mountain bikes too.
Yeah. Okay. Which is... Yeah, I was going to...
Oh, sorry. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead. Like,
well, no. That's, yeah.
Most Everesting attempts aren't for obvious reasons.
It's completely a different thing on a mountain bike versus a road bike.
Even on pavement on a mountain bike is a huge deal.
And mostly because of the tires.
Yeah. Yeah, like, almost entirely because
I think they were just on the same tires they just raced states on, you know. So, yeah, that's huge. And they had to do like 18 and a half laps of that.
Oh, jeez.
And they started like Thursday night, a little after midnight. And, you know, I can't remember exactly how long it took him, but I think they finished Friday night at like 9 or 10. And... They like between laps, they were just kind of taking maybe a minute or two at most.
Cause that's one where you really can't, like, if you want to get it done, like you have to sleep at a certain point. So like you kind of have to get it done.
Yeah. If you take too long of breaks, it really adds up, you know? So, but I went and rode with them kind of about in the middle of their efforts. You know, I think they'd probably done about 8, 9, 10 around when I showed up, you know, and they were super strong while I was riding with them and I had to leave and some other people came and rode with them towards the end. But, it was, well, and so on this, I mentioned this cardboard piece that they had written like the number of laps and they'd cross them off when they'd get them done. And they had a big TBY at the bottom, which I just thought was awesome. And then they would have people sign it that rode with them, you know, which I think is something they'll probably save forever, you know, which was super cool. But it was just so like probably one of my most enjoyable days on a bike ever. Like it was just so much fun to ride with these guys. They were riding at a pretty chill pace that was comfortable for me. And it was just beautiful up there, just the most amazing fall vibe ever. And then we had some more Maybird riders come up and join us. And I was just riding with like just some of the coolest people on the entire planet in a beautiful place. And I just probably one of the happiest things ever for me. But towards the end of our, you know, like... When I had to leave, they were starting to get fatigued, you know, like you could really tell that, like, I remember, I can't remember which twin it was that went and used a bathroom and had to like walk to the bathroom and like, it was up a little incline and he was just dying, like walking up that incline to the bathroom. And
cause Everesting is crazy.
It's crazy. And being with them and witnessing part of this made me realize just how crazy it is and how much planning and support it takes. Like you need a support crew if you're going to try Everesting. Like
you couldn't just go out and do it on your own.
Like their parents took the entire day and had put so much planning and effort into this. It's not just, you don't just like casually go out and do it. And then I left and like, some other people, you know, like Grant and Helena and Andrew Preston were there. Rode with them at the end when they were just really, really, really fatigued and tired. And it was just a lesson in determination because like I saw them and they were super tired with like, and I think when I left, they still had like 6 or 7 laps left.
Oh, jeez.
And they were already done. You know, like I'm sure at that point they wanted just to go home and go to bed and
yeah,
and just say, this is stupid. But they pushed on and it was just like, wow, these kids can do anything they want because they can do that.
So. Well, it's the same. It's honestly the same, similar kind of thing with my student that just like, it's such a young age to have the strength of character even to like do something like that and knuckle down, like by virtue of, you know, being really smart and some really good parenting, and hopefully a good community of people around them. Like that is somebody who can go do whatever they want.
Yeah.
You know, which is cool. And like we've said, like, I think the point of this team has never been to like develop the next world champion. Like I would love to see
it happen. If it happens, that's pretty dang cool.
I'd love to see it happen. Right. But like just the excellent humans thing, I think is always like, is the coolest thing, which I love.
And again, this has been a pretty terrible Halloween episode.
Don't worry, it's going to get a lot. This is going to get a lot less sincere in just a sec. Don't worry.
Yeah, this episode has been brought to you by Hallmark or something.
Oh yeah, seriously, yeah, yeah. I was holding my puppy and crying the other day, and it was just like, but yeah, no, that was super cool. They deserve all of your admiration.
Yeah, I just love this community. You guys are great. I'm so lucky to be. Just so blessed to be around so many cool, awesome people.
Yeah, it's cool to be part of a lot of cool stories like this. And I don't think you and I would like take credit for what Gabe and Oliver are where they are because they're fantastic people who work insanely hard. But it's cool to be like a part of that.
Absolutely.
I love it. So we're almost done with the mushy stuff, we promise.
Yeah, this will be a Halloween episode eventually. Just a reminder, and you know, it's been such a gorgeous fall that, you know, I'm a big advocate of taking a break, and you know, we've done the announcement, and we'll talk about the off season and winter training soon, but we've got, you know, this podcast, another one, and then we're going to talk about that. So I just want to remind everyone that it is important that at some point,
yeah,
to take a couple weeks where you do nothing above zone one.
Yep.
And you
actually
need,
for now,
you need
do whatever you want, but yeah, eventually.
Well, and if it was bad weather right now, I'd tell you to do it now.
Yeah.
But where it's been such a nice warm fall, you know, just keep going out and riding your bike if it's fun. If it's not fun, and if you just don't want to look at your bike for another month or two, that's fine too. But sometime before you start winter training, you really do need to have a week or two. Well, we'll say 2 weeks where you don't go above zone one. And those that... It's kind of one of those things that, like, if you don't need to worry about that, you're going to do it anyway. It's,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
If that made any sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, just that we're... And we will talk about the off-season and winter training, which are two different things. But just that little reminder there. And that's kind of why we wanted to do a bit of a different episode today, because... Really, kind of like right now, if you're out riding your bike, it shouldn't be training.
No.
It should be because you think riding your bike is fun, and you think being in the mountains is fun, and you think that being outside is fun. But
yeah,
you really like, I guess unless you're really taking the cross season seriously, or, you know, like even if you're doing like
Frog Hollow and stuff, like,
don't train for it. You know, if you're riding your bike, it should be because you think riding your bike's fun.
Okay, I'll bear that. I think if you're riding your bike, it shouldn't be because it's against your will. But, you know, you get the point. With that, are we going to jump into Halloween stuff?
Yeah, let's start our Halloween deep dive.
Now, for the record, we haven't hit 30 minutes yet.
Okay.
So this will still be a majority Halloween episode.
Okay.
I should say really quick, I have prepped nothing for this.
Joe has no idea what we're doing whatsoever.
I understand Halloween conceptually, but like... I don't know where you're planning on going with this. So
okay, and honestly too, Joe came by. It's a Saturday night. We've lately been recording these on Mondays, but he's had some time
and so I was gonna come by and play video games. And like I was like, you know what, like free up my... I've got a busy week. We'll free up my Monday night.
Yeah, I'm not completely ready for this. And I just ate a big, huge Utah burrito. Have you had a Utah burrito?
I've had a Utah burrito with you.
They are amazing.
They're incredible.
I don't think it's doing a whole lot for my brain fog or anything right now.
Well, you know what? I've been sleepy all week. So like,
I'm sleepy too. So this, yeah. We're just really trying to set expectations low.
Oh, this is going to be bad. I know, really quick, for what it's worth, I know my voice is even more grating than it usually is. And I have like a ridiculous amount of vocal fry right now because I've been sick all week. And my caffeine-free Diet Coke is empty. So this will be, we'll slog through the rest of this.
But. Okay. But anyhow, I just thought it would be fun to do something because we really don't need to talk about like, you know, we don't need to talk about zone 2 right now. We don't really need to talk about like intervals right now. We don't need to talk about fueling right now, you know? So I think it would just be fun. Hopefully this is fun. If it's not, you'll get your money back. So
yeah, there you go.
But anyhow, so yeah, we're going to do a Halloween episode. I wanted to first start with some Halloween rapid fire questions for Joe and I to discuss.
Mm.
And then I was going to just talk about some spooky things around town. And then I've got a couple of semi scary stories to go over. So,
okay.
And then that'll be that. That's the deep dive. So what do you think?
Oh, I'm hit me.
Okay, let's go. So Joe, we're going to start with some Halloween rapid fire questions to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, what's the best trick or treating candy?
The best trick or treating candy. I think the two that come to mind are Butterfinger.
Oh,
which I think is Butterfinger. Well,
are you like 80?
No, Butterfingers are good. Butterfingers aren't for old people. What are
you talking
about?
Butterfingers are for old people.
No, Butterfingers aren't for old people.
Okay.
Butterfinger's our secret word right out of the gates. I can tell you that. I think my holy trinity is Butterfinger. I think Almond Joys are actually pretty good. I think Almond Joys get hated on. I think the Almond Joy flavor profile is actually fairly complex.
I swear you're 80.
You know, I can't. I have. There's a lot of. Yeah. You don't. Yeah. Maybe. Okay. Maybe a little bit in the worst way, right? I do think that like Reese's is kind of the obvious one. And I'm trying to give you like a non Reese's answer. But in my pantheon of great Halloween candy, that's what stands out.
Okay.
What about you?
You know, usually it's like when I was a kid, if you got $100,000, that was
kind of... You say I'm 80, $100,000. What are you talking about?
No, those are good. They're like crispy.
I'm not saying they're not
caramel.
Good. Those are for old people. Can you, do they even come in the mix of Halloween candies anymore?
Yes, they do. Okay, that's a really hot take, Joe, because $100,000's
okay, hang on. So for the people listening, I'm very confident that more people are eating Butterfinger than $100,000.
No, because they're like, they've got like caramel and crispy things in them and cookies and like, they're like, it's like...
Oh, it's good. I like them.
It's like Twix and the crispy bars had a baby or something.
I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying it's weird for you to level that like Butterfingers are for old people, but that like $100,000's aren't. That's a weird...
Okay, so that was always kind of like you won the sweepstakes if you get one of those. But, you know, like lately I've kind of been into Three Musketeers.
Okay, I'm going to take issue with it. Are you choosing these to upset me? Are you trying to get a rise out of me?
Twix is good too.
Twix is good. Let's go back to Three Musketeers. So Three Musketeers is for babies. That's baby. That's baby's first Halloween candy. So that is a marshmallow covered in chocolate.
But it's kind of chocolatey flavored. So
the next question. No, you like it because it's chocolate flavored? That's your argument? All of mine are chocolate flavored too.
Do you know what rapid fire means?
No. Okay. I've never been accused of being concise.
Okay. So that was
You just dropped like 8 bombs on me there and then want me to move on. Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. Well,
let the people decide.
Favorite costume you ever wore as a kid?
Favorite costume I ever wore as a kid would be Obi-Wan Kenobi for sure. I wore the heck out of that costume. I hit puberty in that costume. I ripped the butt of that costume at a church Halloween party because it was way too small. I loved that costume. Had like little like boots built into it that just like covered your shoes that like rode like 6 inches up my ankles because it was so small. Like I loved that costume.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do remember that costume got way too small.
It was very arrow. It was like, I think maybe the you part of it.
Like, yeah, you could probably like use it as a skin suit.
It would test pretty fast. I'm sure. It was great.
I remember I made a robot costume once as a kid out of cardboard boxes and duct tape and stuff. And I remember I used my own money, went to the hardware store and bought some dryer vent that my arms would go in.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was my costume.
Huh.
It was really hard to walk in trick-or-treating.
I think between your costume and your candy preferences, it really does sound like you grew up during the Great Depression. Like, okay. You know, that's cute. That's adorable. I love you. It. I never made my own costume. I did not have that kind of initiative as a kid.
Well, I lost that long ago. Okay, scariest movie.
Scariest movie that I've seen. Oh, I don't do scary movies.
I was going to say, do you like scary movies?
I don't. Tessa likes scary movies.
I used to, but lately I don't. I feel kind of icky watching them.
No, I've seen a few. And really, truly, I haven't seen that many. I have seen The Changeling, and I think that's going to be your answer.
Yeah, The Changeling is definitely...
The Changeling's scary. The only horror movie I've actually seen, other than The Changeling, because I don't seek them out at all, is there was one on Netflix that was about some guys who go backpacking in Norway, and there's a monster. Mm. And it was like, it was scary. I watched that a couple years ago on Halloween, and it was scary.
I thought Stranger Things was scary.
You thought Stranger... Okay, well, there you go. Dan and I think our bar for scary is like...
Yeah.
Different. But yeah, I would say probably The Changeling, I think, is like, in the sense of like a traditional horror movie that's highly regarded, I think that's probably the scariest thing I've seen.
It scared, yeah. That scared me. I couldn't sleep a few nights after watching it.
A few nights after watching Stranger Things?
No.
I think you're going to say The Incredibles.
The Changelings.
The Changeling. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I couldn't sleep a few nights. And I just made that plural for some reason.
The Changelings.
There was just one Changeling.
Is that like the Netflix sequel that's
coming
out?
Spoiler alert. But, thoughts on candy corn?
I think candy corn is fine. That's my hot take. I think candy corn is good.
I think it's polarizing. To just say it's just fine is...
Is that a hot take to say it's... Yeah, because it's like, it's not gross. It's sugar. It's not gross. Like, if you think it's gross, you're weird. It's not gross. I think it's a little too sweet, but I do like it. I don't like it. Like, I like a Reese's any time of year. Any time of year, someone drops a Reese's on my desk, that's a good day for me, right? Candy corn would be weird in March, right? I think it is too sweet and kind of like, I don't even know if I have the word for it. It's fun as a seasonal treat, other than the pumpkins. The pumpkins are gross. The pumpkins are like eating a candle. And I do think that I prefer the chocolate candy corns flavor-wise over the traditional ones.
And that's me too. I love the chocolate ones. The other kind are okay, but the chocolate ones are just a level up for sure.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's kind of the XX1 of the candy corns.
You're so out of date, because it's not even, it's XX now, Dan.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, they're the XXSL transmission T-type.
Okay.
Yeah.
This next question,
for those
I
of
like,
you who will never date. Yes.
I really like this next question.
Okay.
What's your favorite Halloween meal that's kind of like the antidote to all the candy you eat?
Halloween meal.
Like, yeah, you eat a meal on Halloween night that's kind of like an antidote to all the candy that you're eating.
I think chili.
Mm-hmm.
Chili might be my favorite food the more I think about it. I think like chili and cornbread.
Okay.
Perfect. You know, just like a very like but like a vegetable heavy one too, because you've just eaten so much low quality chocolate that like I would say chili and cornbread.
Okay.
What about you?
I was going to say that or pizza and breadsticks.
Yeah. Yeah, either one of those.
Either one of those would be good.
But the nice thing about chili is like you can make chili pretty healthy. And I think that's so refreshing when you're coming off of a Halloween experience. So I'm going to stick with my answer, but I respect yours. That's the first answer you've given me that I respect.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Okay, so that's all my rapid fire questions, unless you can think of any more.
I'm curious to know, what is your best, because there's Halloween candy and then there's candy. What is the best candy you've ever had? Because there's like Kit Kats, ooh, Reese's, Snickers are your Halloween candy.
You know, I think that the Tony Chocolonely pretzel bar, toffee pretzel bar, is probably my favorite candy.
That's actually a really good answer. I didn't think of that. Because I was going to say, being married to a citizen of the Great White North, the Canucks have access, and maybe the Brits do too, have access to a candy bar called a Coffee Crisp. That's phenomenally good. Very, very good. Every time I go up there, I grab a couple of those. Those are good. I think Kinder Bueno of like easily, like those have become accessible in most grocery stores. Kinder Bueno is excellent, but the Tony Chocolonely, those are interesting. Cause that's like, they're probably like of all the chocolate making companies, they do the least slave labor. And they actually say that they're like, we can't even guarantee that our chocolate isn't a product of child slave labor, but we strive for it not to be, which is, I think, a pretty, not a subtle knock at your Nestle and Mars kind of, you know, like, yeah, I'd say if you haven't tried the Tony stuff, it's very, very, very good.
Yeah, so let's move on. So next, I just wanted to kind of...
That cut was rough, by the way. I had to cough. I no, that transition was bad. We cut. I'm not going to go back and edit it.
Well, we don't really edit anything.
No, we don't. We were actually talking about it. Anyway, you were saying...
Yeah, we have like zero post-production on this, in case you can't
tell. The production value is free.
yeah, so I just wanted to, like, I kind of wanted to go just talk about some of the kind of spooky things around town. Mm. And then like after that, I've just got a few spooky stories I was going to tell.
Okay.
Not super spooky, because I don't like super spooky, but a little bit spooky.
We're soft.
Kind of like mild salsa spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pace you picante know, of spooky.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, today, so Andrew had this idea today. He wanted to like, we have us do a bike ride through all the spooky parts of town.
Mm.
And so we rode past the old mill, and I thought he'd like stop and give us like a tour and tell us about all these spooky places we rode past. Really, I think the only spooky places we rode past were like the old mill, and then we rode over to the Salt Lake Cemetery. And road rides with Andrew are a trip. Like, he knows all the secret passages through town, like all these little back alleys that go between neighborhoods. And so that was kind of fun, but it really didn't end up being anything super interesting from the spooky side, but we did, I don't know. Can we talk about this on the podcast? Like, our really bizarre experience today?
Yes. With the caveat that, like, I want to make it very clear. We're not like making fun of a person who is obviously in a bad situation, and I don't want to like make light of anybody's struggles with this, but it was, I do think it's in bounds because it was just so bizarre and not a situation I've ever been in before. So I do want to make it clear really quick. I hope it doesn't seem like we're like mining comedic value out of somebody who is in a crisis, but for what it's worth, it was a weird situation.
Yeah. So we were riding our bikes along 20th East in Mill Creek, and all of a sudden we hear help, call 911, like screaming.
And there's a kid on the roof of a house.
We thought.
Well, and I see someone sitting on the roof of a house, which is odd. That's not something people usually do. And this is a really steep roof, right? And as we're riding by it, my thought was like, this looks like a bored kid who is causing trouble. But I think my policy is, someone calls for help, let them cry wolf, better safe than sorry. It's on the other side of the street. So I kind of stop and I get off my bike and I run across the street. And it's not a child. It's a woman who's sitting on this house. And it took you guys a sec to get there. Like, I think you guys thought I was going to go check. And then you guys, it was like a minute or two before you guys showed up. And I'm looking at this person, and they were calling for help a second ago, and they were, once I got there, they were very aggravated, and they were not happy that I was there. And they expressed that to me very explicitly, that they wanted me to go away. And then they expressed some concern that I knew their name. And to be clear, I didn't. And this person was saying, well, how do you know my name's Amber? And this one was like, oh, okay. So this person's having a,
yeah.
This is a person in crisis. They're not like,
she was tripping.
And at this point, you and Andrew had shown up, I feel like, and like a guy walking his dog, and the next door neighbor were there. And I'm like, okay, so the person who lives in this house is having an episode, and they're on their roof. And the next door neighbor comes over with his ladder. I'm like, does this person live here? And he's like, I've never seen this person in my life. I was like, oh, that's another dimension to this. And then the older homeowner came out and was obviously concerned that there was someone on a roof. And she was at various points was like dangling off, not dangling, but like holding on to like the peak of the roof and kind of sliding down it. And then standing on the roof with the chimney, and went back and forth between being like great, like having maybe moments of lucidity where she was glad that we were there, and then being really, really aggravated by the fact that we were there, and was really upset that someone had called the police, even though she had too. And I don't know if you've ever it was deeply, deeply, deeply weird. And I didn't really know what I was supposed to do. Cause I'm like, I'm pretty sure.
Well, anytime she would like stand up, and we're like, no, sit down.
Right.
And the fascinating thing was, is that roof was really, really steep. And I don't know how she really got up there. Like,
yeah, that was the other thing. We were confused because, you know, this is not her house. And not to like look for reasons that you do things when you're doing meth, but like, cause there, I don't know if there are reasons, but just the practical side of like how you got yourself up there. And then just the concern that she was going to fall too. And it wouldn't have, I mean, it wouldn't have been a fall that would kill you, but you'd get hurt. And so we're kind of standing. I'm like, I don't want to get close and aggravate her and make her fall. But I also want to be close enough that if she started to fall, we could maybe kind of catch her. And I was just like, I really hope the police show up. And like what felt like two business days later, the police do show up. And I was kind of like,
but when the police did show up, it was like all the police.
Yeah, it was like, but I was kind of like, what are you guys going to do about this? Like, I can't imagine you going.
Well, the fire department was coming and we just kind of left at that point. But the funniest thing of all was Joe was going to call his ride Amber Alert,
which I realized was probably in poor taste, but
it was funny.
Yeah,
check out my Strava today. Like I put a picture of it. It was just kind of, I thought it was kind of weird.
I think it was a good reminder that like,
yeah, don't do drugs, kids.
Don't do it was one of those moments where I'm like, you know, I've been in some bad places, but I haven't been on a roof yet.
I haven't like all of a sudden ended up on a roof and they're like, how did I get here?
Yeah, I've never been on the roof of a stranger's house for reasons that I'm unable to explain.
Yeah.
So there you go. That was, you just got to throw that. Throw
so
that
yeah, was, I thought it was interesting. It's kind of.
It was a weird Halloween ride. And then we rode through a cemetery later. I tried a chocolate Twinkie.
Oh, the chocolate Twinkies were good.
The chocolate Twinkie is good.
Yeah.
It's tasty.
So that was that. So the first, you know, I thought a lot about like what I wanted to talk about on our Halloween episode. I kind of had the idea to do a Halloween episode before I had any ideas what to talk about. So I thought about a lot of things. There's some kind of interesting, spooky, local urban legends that I think everyone kind of knows about. You know, I thought about the old mill first, which is, you know, a lot of interesting history behind the old mill. Could have done a whole episode about that. Might've been kind of interesting. I mean, the legend is supposedly like some homeless guy and his dog died in the fire there. And you can walk by and hear a dog barking inside the old mill at night or something. And, you know, which is a little bit creepy. And
because I will say, I think a lot of Utah hauntings have the same flavor that whatever prominent polygamist had a wife who had beef with him or something. And now she haunts this given structure or whatever. So I think a lot of Utah hauntings are kind of lame. So that one, I'm glad there's a little bit of, I was going to say flair, but probably not the best.
For a place that burned down.
Yeah, for a place that burned down.
The other one is, have you ever heard of the Sidewalks?
No.
Yeah, so the Sidewalks, and the people in the Cove might know a lot more about this than I do, but the Sidewalks was like, so the legend was, it's actually up in the Cove. And apparently a rich guy...
I was going to say, did a patent attorney trip and die, and now he haunts that section of the sidewalk?
The story is like, apparently some really, really rich guy had like some land up there, and he made these sidewalks for his wife, who was apparently crazy or something, could walk around these sidewalks, and...
Because she's crazy? Was that like her favorite thing to do?
I don't know. Just so she had her own sidewalks to walk around and like through the trees and really pretty and stuff, you know, like these narrow paths and so forth. And
okay.
And, but then I have no idea if this is true or not. I couldn't find anything on this. Like,
where did you hear this?
Oh, well, I'll tell you in a sec. Okay. Apparently like legend has it, he killed her on the sidewalks and her ghost haunts it. And so the sidewalks do exist. Did exist. Because when I was in high school, we actually found them and we trespassed and got caught.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I haven't told you this yet.
No.
And got in trouble.
How much trouble did you get in?
We sweet talked our way out of it. Like the guy that caught us said he was going to call the cops and We managed to kind of charm our way out of it, you know, and I felt really bad.
I have never heard this story.
Yeah, I've never told.
I've been on the planet for most of the time that you have, and I have never heard the story.
Yeah, so and it was like, yeah, there were like these little paths that were only like a couple, 2 or 3 feet wide. That it was kind of like this little maze through these trees and stuff, and. It wasn't really that scary. It wasn't really that cool. It wasn't really worth getting in trouble for.
Huh.
But I don't know if the stories are true or they're probably not. Most likely they're not. But I think someone's built a house on them. They've torn them down. They don't exist anymore.
wonder if that house is haunted now. Like the guy goes to get in his Porsche and it's already on. Like,
yeah, I think it's an enormous house they built on it. And
yeah.
Yeah. So, so that was another thing I thought about talking about, but yeah, I did. And that's all I had to say about it. You know, 'cause like I really could find nothing.
Cove haunting. That's funny to me. I think cove haunting is a little funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then I came across another thing that I thought was kind of interesting. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things, so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on one thing.
This is okay. We're rapid firing
this,
these.
This is kind
I
of
was a little worried that was your only story. I was like, oh boy, I wonder how much I'm going to have to mine out of that. Okay. Okay. Let's, what else do we have?
All right. So the next thing I came across that I thought was kind of cool is, have you heard of the Escalante Petrified Forest?
No.
No, this is kind of cool.
Is this a real thing? Really this, quick.
Okay.
That sounds real.
Out of all the things I'm talking about today, little disclaimer.
Okay.
This is probably the most real.
Because really quick, petrified forests are a thing.
Okay, yeah. This is a place. It's a national, or it's a state park.
Okay.
It's a state park, and I don't know exactly where it is. It's in Escalante somewhere.
Okay.
I don't know exactly where it is.
It's a big area.
And so apparently, like, this wood's like millions of years old, and it's wood that would have like gone into like a body of water, and all the sediment from the water comes in and turns
replaces the,
yeah,
the organic matter. Okay.
The organic matter with minerals and I think quartz. And so it basically turns trees into rocks, and you can still see like, the rings of the trees, and I guess the wood is like extremely beautiful. And so apparently, I guess if you go to the park, there's signs everywhere that say, do not touch anything, do not take anything. And so there's been people that have taken little samples of some of the petrified wood.
Oh, interesting. I'm looking at pictures of this.
Yeah. They've kind of stolen little, like they've basically taken petrified rocks, wood. And
petrified rocks are rocks, Dan, but carry on.
Okay. And then almost instantly they start having really, really bad luck. And apparently the visitor center of this state park has, okay, get this, thousands of letters from people who have taken rocks,
mailing them back
and saying, I'm so sorry I took this. As soon as I took it, really, really strange things started happening. And there's thousands of these stories, and they have them. They used to have them on display at the visitor center, but I think they don't have them like an actual display now anymore. But like some of these stories are like a guy and his girlfriend, like they took a rock and broke up on the drive home. They got in a huge fight and broke up on the drive home. A lot of people, after they steal a rock, will like lose their employment. And
so we're not talking like your firstborn child dies. Like these are
no,
like,
there's been deaths. Like close people have died to people that have stolen rocks. Like so many people say that like as soon as they took the one of these rocks, like their life just turned for the worse. Like there's one story out there that like a guy took a rock and ended up like, and this was kind of the most extreme story I heard, but he got like a major foot infection where his foot just started to turn like, just started turning like, just swelling and was so painful he couldn't wear a shoe anymore, and he was like a delivery driver and he would get really, really sleepy and miss work, and just like all kinds of crazy, crazy stories about people. And they have a whole pile of rocks out there that are rocks that people mailed back that were stolen, and then they just started feeling really bad about it and mailed them back with these apology letters.
Oh, wow. No, this is like well documented, huh?
Yeah. In fact, there's like a book that has, like, you can buy this book that has like all the apology letters in them, and that kind of explains.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait. Book. Oh, there's a very active Reddit thread on this. I want to find this book. Keep going.
I'm looking for the book. Gosh, that's kind of all I had on that. But yeah, lots of interesting stories on that. I thought that was super cool. So moving on. One thing that
I found it. Okay. Sorry. Keep going. I'm listening.
Okay. One thing that I've always thought was interesting is for some reason, Spanish Fort Canyon.
Okay. I'm ready. I have said this before. There is a weird and ancient and bad, and I should say really quick, I am one of those obnoxious skeptic people. I don't like conspiracy theories. I don't like haunting stories. I'm not into any of that. I've said on my own before, independent of whatever you're about to read, that there's a weird and bad energy in Spanish Fork. It feels like there's something ancient and not cool there. And I wouldn't, if for a beautiful place, I would never camp there ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like it's a place you wouldn't want your car to break down.
Price, Utah gives me weird vibes.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay.
Because, let's start with Helper, Utah.
Okay.
Like Helper, Utah is supposedly a hot spot for haunting.
Okay.
And first of all, the name Helper is kind of interesting. Do you know where I got that name?
I have no idea.
Because I guess like apparently there were trains that were stationed out there that they would use these trains to help get other trains like up the canyon because they needed like extra horsepower to get up the canyons, and they just would have these trains that would come on and help other trains get up the hill. So yeah. That's kind of where I got the name Helper. But Helper was like a mining town and it's just kind of like just a hot spot for haunted stories. And one of the biggest ones there is that I think it was called like the White Lady or something. A lady had her husband and her child, cause they used child labor back then. They both died in a mine and she went to in a mine accident. She went to the mine managers and asked for money to help now that she was a widow. And they basically told her that they weren't going to help her. And you know, so, and apparently there's like a really, really spooky museum in Helper, Utah that has all kinds of creepy old mining artifacts and so forth. And so super creepy area. There's like a story of like a lot of people talk about seeing like, they'll see like a hitchhiker that kind of disappears, but they're like, and they'll see like the hitchhiker at the bottom end of the canyon and then they'll see him up higher or something. And, you know, and that's just kind of like a story of I've kind of heard about. But then, so here's a story, just a story, about a family that was traveling from, I think it was Twin Falls to like Grand Junction or something. And they were going up through Spanish Fort Canyon. They stopped at a gas station along the way in Spanish Fork. They stopped at a, and this was actually back in like the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pulling, a trailer, like a camping trailer. Yeah, so they stopped for gas in Spanish Fork, and they're pulling this trailer up Spanish Fork Canyon. And but so you got to understand, like back then, safety wasn't as big of an issue because apparently, like at the gas station, the parents let the kids ride in the trailer.
Mm.
There were three kids.
Yeah. People died a lot younger back then, for the record.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I wasn't alive in the 60s, but like, you know, when I was a kid, we could ride in the back of pickup trucks and you just don't ever see that anyway. So the kids were riding in the back of the trailer. They were driving up the canyon really, really fast. And the road was a lot rougher back then. It was a lot smaller. They go around a corner fast and the trailer disconnected from the vehicle. And the trailer rolled, it rolled down the canyon wall. And when the trailer rolled, like it just broke apart into pieces, like everywhere. Like there are pieces of this trailer scattered everywhere. But the, you know, and they stopped, They got someone to get help. Eventually police came, the fire department came. There were trailers scattered everywhere, but no sign whatsoever of the kids.
Ooh.
And there were, yeah. And they searched and searched, you know, through the next days and weeks and could just find zero evidence of the kids whatsoever.
Hmm.
And so the story is interesting because, because there's some people that theorize, like, you know, from looking into it a little bit more, you know, it seems like there wasn't a very happy, loving home. And maybe, you know, maybe this is,
left at the gas station.
Yeah. One theory is that the kids escaped at the gas station and never got in the trailer.
Hmm.
That was just a story that the parents told.
Hmm.
Another theory is that the kids escaped at the gas station, you know, it just kind of worked out that way. But another theory is that the kids just survived the crash and have made like a residence in some of the old mining homes in the hills, and that they never died. They just escaped from the crash. But there's stories about like people when they park, you know, there's people that like park and try and catch some rest near this area, that like during the night they'll hear kids and they'll hear like scratching on their car and they'll hear kids playing outside. And so
interesting.
Yeah. So kind of crazy. There's just a lot of crazy, scary things up Spanish Fork Canyon.
I don't like Spanish Fork Canyon. I've said it again. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Don't like Spanish Fork Canyon. The vibes are bad.
And how are we doing on time? Because I could have one more story.
We're about an hour. We can throw in one more.
One more story?
Throw in one more.
So this is my story. I've told this to people before. This is my story about working at Amelia's Floral and Draper.
Mm-hmm. Now, Amelia's Floral was on the intersection of 123rd
and about 7th, I think.
Yeah.
And it was like an old ice house. And it was like the oldest building in Draper. And they've since torn it down. And they've actually built like a nursing home there.
Yeah.
Which my grandma actually lived at.
Yeah. Two of my grandmas lived at the same time.
Yeah. It used to be this old building that someone turned into a floral shop. And I, when I was in high school, I got a job as a delivery driver there. And all the ladies that worked there claimed that this place was super haunted. And everyone there had a ghost story. And I had never seen a ghost, or I didn't, you know, super skeptical. But I always just thought it was super interesting. And some of the stories they told was like they had like a showroom, and then you walk down some stairs and there was like the shop where they made all the flowers and everything. And like one time the owner heard the doorbell ring. There was like, as the door would open, it would ring a little bell. And she heard the bell ring, and she'd go out and no one was there. You know, no one was in the showroom. And another time the owner heard some kids playing in the bathroom, you know, and she goes into the bathroom to kind of tell them to be quiet. And there was no one in the bathroom, you know, so all kinds of crazy things happen in this old building. But so I worked there. I was a delivery driver, but sometimes they'd have me do other stuff. And I only worked like a couple hours a week. But it was almost Christmas time, and they wanted me to, there was this room that was up above the shop where they made all the flowers. And I show up to work, and they were all just kind of quiet and looking at me and like, "Dan, you need to go up and get our Christmas decorations from the attic." And I'm kind of like, "Oh, okay." I could tell no one else wanted to.
Okay.
You know, so
make the poor little minimum wage high schooler. take one for the team, right?
Yeah. And so I'm like, didn't think it was too big of a deal. So they open the door that leads to the attic, and they open the door, and there's these stairs that go up to the attic, and they were stairs, but they were so steep that you almost had to use your hands. And
like in the really old houses with like the ridiculously, yeah.
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 Like you couldn't do it without using your hands. They were that steep, but they were still stairs. And I just remember it was like the super shag carpet that someone had put on it. And I start walking up, and I was like walking up the stairs, and I get to the top of the stairs. And I didn't really want to look around because I was kind of getting the creeps a little bit, you know, and there was a light from a window. So I didn't have to turn on any lights, but you know, there was enough lights that I could see. And I looked straight ahead, and thankfully I could see a box. The box I was looking for was right ahead, and it said Christmas decorations. It's like, oh good. I don't have to really spend a whole lot of time searching around this place. And I start walking towards the box, and then all of a sudden, you know that feeling when you know that someone's like watching you?
Yeah.
All of a sudden I started to get that feeling. And I look over and I see a tiny little man that was wearing like shepherd's clothing, standing right there looking at me. But he was also made of plastic.
Okay, I was gonna say it was Christmas supplies. It was the shepherd's clothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was made of plastic, and it was actually like a light up Christmas display thing.
Still scary.
But when I saw that, I like tried to scream.
Yeah.
But nothing came out.
Yes.
It was like the most scared I've ever been.
Like true pure animal
in my life, because it was almost like I actually saw a ghost. But I didn't.
But that's interesting, because you know what it would feel like to see
one. Exactly. That's the thing. I know, because I felt like something was there. I look around and I looked at that thing, and I thought it was a ghost, and it was terrifying.
And that's weird, because you're not expecting that either. Like that almost seems like the bizarre sort. Like if you saw a Boo ghost, you know, like the white sheet with the eyes or whatever. Like it's so much weirder to see like a little shepherd man. And in the time that it takes your brain to compute, oh yeah, Christmas supplies, like shepherd in the manger, whatever, right? That like,
yeah. But I remember trying to scream.
For your brain to process that, right? You know?
I remember trying to scream, but I couldn't because I was so terrified.
And then the next day, you were like, oh, that's a shepherd, and you went back downstairs. And yeah.
No, I actually thought it was kind of funny, and was kind of chuckling the rest of the way down, and you know, so I didn't see a ghost, but I kind of know how it would feel if I did see a ghost.
That's interesting.
And, yeah. And just as a disclaimer too, that whole story about the trailer and the kids, I totally made that up. I was trying to find a good story.
Wait, hang on. Are you telling us out of guilt? Like you couldn't hold the line or whatever? Like you don't like lying? Or
I don't want people to like go look up that story and try to find those missing kids.
Hang on. This could have been such an interesting thing to see if you could start a haunting rumor. Just get it out to a few hundred people that'll tell their friend. No, let's go back and cut that. I want to see if we can start a haunting rumor.
No. I just don't want people to like start Googling like the three lost kids of Spanish Fork Canyon.
Why? Like, all this other stuff kids are Googling. That's like so far down the list of stuff that like freaks me out.
I don't know. I couldn't find a story I liked, so I resorted to making one up. So I just used that. Like my English wasn't very good right there. So
yeah, it's okay. No one's is these days. Really? You made that up?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I couldn't find one I liked. So
you couldn't just be like, yeah, everybody like Spanish Fork feels weird. Anyway. So the next story,
yeah,
there's this bathroom stall at work and the vibes are just off. Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if we're good at Halloween episodes or not, but
I know.
Maybe we should stick to bikes. But if you liked this and thought it was fun, maybe we could do like an Easter episode.
Here's the. Anyway, I was going to say over the winter, like we do. I don't want to say we run out of stuff to talk about, but maybe we could plug in a little bit more nonsense if it's like December and we're like, I don't know.
No, I think I've got.
Are we good for the winter? Are you stocked up with winter topics?
I've got a lot of things I want to talk about. I think we're going to be good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like permission to maybe bring some nonsense one of these days.
If you guys hate this, let us know.
We're open to your feedback. Everyone that listens to this, like, knows us. Except we were actually, for whatever reason, and maybe any of you could shed light on this, the episode we did about bottlenecks got 3 times as many downloads as the next highest ranking episode we've done. Like an order of magnitude higher than we've done before. That episode really blew up, like, well beyond the team, and we don't know why. So I kind of doubt anybody knows, but if anybody knows,
watch this one go viral. And
yeah, and then you undercut your story. Like, I do actually think it would be fun to try to, like, start some kind of rumor. I'm working in a middle school, in case you can't tell. Can I finish with a really funny, like yes. That just with from school. My wife teaches too. And so that comes up when I teach, right? And she teaches 5th grade. So a lot of times to my kids, I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, like, my wife said she taught this last year. This is part of the curriculum. You should know this, right? So my kids know all about Tessa. And one fun fact about Tessa, if you've never met her, is that she is, and I know the bar is low, much better looking than I am, right? And so my kids are kind of fascinated with her. They love to meet her. And I speak about her very highly. And we're 2 weeks into school, and I'm a brand new teacher, right? And it's after school, and this girl comes into my classroom, and she's very upset. You can see she's very concerned. She's upset. She's looking over her shoulder. And she says, Mr. Draper, I need to tell you something. I'm like, okay. Right, this is one of those I need to be the grown-up moments. She needs to tell me something. Okay, we go, okay, what do you need to tell me? She's like, I don't know if I should tell you this, but you know your wife, which is a hilarious way to start a sentence. I'm like, yes, I do know my wife. We've met. There's a rumor going around that she's cheating on you. And I was like, oh, like, that has, I haven't said anything about that. Like, I've said that I am married. She's like, yeah, all the kids in the whole grade are talking about it. I'm like, okay. So I've always kind of wondered, like, we should maybe try to start a rumor or something, or like a haunting rumor. Cause that seems like a really potent force, that these things can kind of spiral out of control really quickly. For the record, that is funny, right? That you've got like a whole bunch of 11-year-olds like casting me in their mental soap opera. And part of me wanted to, like, feed the,
that
you
was
know.
Nice that she was concerned about you, though.
Like, for this individual student, I'm like, first off, you guys are jerks for, like, doing that. But for this individual student, and I love that she felt, like, the immense weight of having to tell me and, like, ruin my marriage. She was going to be the one to, like, crack this open and expose this whole thing. So this is great, man. These kids are something else. I'm like, I can tell that you guys are bored, and I'm going to bear that in mind. I need to plan more interesting lessons. But yeah, maybe we should. How about this? Secret word today. You can either give us
Butterfinger,
or if you are so inclined, you can share your, because I'm going to do this with my kids, your 2-sentence horror story. 2 sentences. You're limited to that.
Or maybe next year we could get ghost stories from the team.
Or I think we should share, if we get any good 2-sentence ghost stories from the team, or that could be a Strava poll too, we could, like, share the best ones we get on the show. How about that?
Okay.
Or if you're lazy, you can just say Butterfinger. So
I'd just say Butterfinger.
I don't know. I think that'd be fun. Either way.
Like the haunted Butterfinger factory.
The haunted Butterfinger factory. Band name. Anyway, let us know on this one. Text us, I guess, whatever you want. Text us one of several different things that we pitched there. I'm going to finally go get a drink of water so I stop sounding like a Kardashian. And we will talk to you guys next week.